On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy, supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
The other major story of the week, aside from the development of COVID-19, has also been the final report of the Commission of Investigation into Mother and Baby Homes, a long-awaited report which appears to have left a lot of the survivors fairly disappointed with the nature of its findings. We are joined on the line now by the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman. Minister, good afternoon.
Hi, Gavin. How are you?
Thanks so much for speaking to us this afternoon. I might start, if I can, with the same question that I asked you at the press conference on Tuesday afternoon. I accept that you are not the commission, so you can't account for how it went about its business or how it reached its findings. But 5 days removed, are you any wiser as to why the commission might have said that there was scant or almost no evidence of forced adoptions or physical abuse when the commission itself published testimony alleging that that was the case?
Well, I think, as you say, the commission is an independent body. From my own reading of the report, and look, I think everyone reads it themselves and takes their own interpretation of it. But from my own reading of the document, it was very clear to me that the circumstances in which so many of these women were left following the birth of their children, abandoned by their families, pressure put on them by local authority figures like clergy or doctors, and in particular the fact that the state had never put in place any financial supports for unmarried mothers prior to 1973, left them in situations where they felt they had absolutely no choice but to accede to an adoption.
Mm. Now, so do you think that tallies then with the commission's findings that no one was really forced to do it?
I think the commission, and again, my reading is that the commission took a very legalistic approach to that issue of consent, and they took a finding that they could not see that consent was compelled. But as I say, from my own reading, it is very clear that these women were left with absolutely no choice because of the circumstances in which they were in.
So does that mean then that do you accept the commission's findings on that, or do you depart from it?
I think it's very clear that women were left with absolutely no choice. And I think that comes from both the description of what happened within the report, but particularly when you read the personal accounts contained in the chapter of the confidential committee, where you see time and time again women put in incredibly difficult situations, incredibly difficult circumstances, and taking actions which had support been provided by the state, I think we all know they would have taken different responses.
You can understand how survivors of mother and baby homes might feel, they might welcome the acknowledgement that in fact there was something of a forced adoption culture, or that there was some evidence of abuse, but that they'll find it very frustrating that the minister responsible for publishing the report on the weekend that it's published says there probably was evidence, but the commission itself says there wasn't.
Well, look, I think I can absolutely understand the upset on behalf of former residents of mothers and adoptees. This report is incredibly harrowing for anybody to read, but for those who were actually present, who lived in these institutions, I can only try and imagine how difficult it is to read through this report, look at the recollections of so many former residents of the awful circumstances in which they went through. And I suppose my focus now as minister and as part of the government is the set of responses that we've set out, the 22 action points to start to address the issues, both that were flagged by the report, but also that have been discussed with me by survivors in my engagements with them over the last number of months. And that's where my focus
is
now.
And I'll come back to action points in just a minute. But are you entirely satisfied with the way that the commission went about its business? Because now that we've had 4 or 5 days to hear from the survivors themselves about their own interactions with the commission and their experiences of it, I'm struck by one survivor, for example, Noelle Brown, who is in today's Irish Mail on Sunday, saying she asked for a copy of the evidence that she gave. You know, she was able to obtain a transcript, but the transcript that she obtained wasn't really the same as the evidence she gave, because she discovered that her transcript has been sort of mutated into 222 questions with boxes to be ticked, that it's almost taken the form of a survey rather than evidence. And she doesn't feel that it appropriately reflects the evidence that she gave. And she's not the only one.
Well, look, I think the first thing to say is I understand originally the commission weren't providing those survivors who had gone before the confidential committee and given their personal accounts with that evidence. And I understand that's changed in recent days or recent weeks. And I think that's important. I think people who went before the confidential committee should be entitled to get their personal accounts returned to them. I've heard some survivors state that they're not happy with the way in which their personal accounts were noted down by the confidential committee. I think, you know, there are a very significant number of these personal accounts produced within the commission's report.
No, and you can understand why the commission needs to take some sort of structure as well, but it almost seems as if all of their interviews were taking the form of a survey rather than really allowing the testimony to speak for itself.
Yeah, and I think the approach that the commission took under its rules its rules and procedures was to take testimony from some survivors before the commission itself, and then separately to take the personal accounts of survivors before the confidential committee. Now, my understanding is that those personal accounts weren't sworn testimony in the same way that the testimony was before the commission itself. But I think it is important that survivors are being provided with their personal accounts so that they can have them provided.
No, sure, and that's fair enough. But I mean, even the distinction between whether it was sworn testimony or not, it still should be recorded accurately. And even in Noelle Brown's case, she says that there are some significant inaccuracies, including even the date that she entered the home and the date in which her birth mother died.
Yeah, well, look, I certainly think that's concerning if there's inaccuracies to the content of key details like that's definitely an issue of concern. I can understand why Noelle and any other survivor who experienced that would be upset by that.
I know you're not answerable again for the commission, but I know it's not the dumb thing. But would you think it's a good idea for the commission maybe to publicly take some questions itself or to try and address some of those criticisms in a public forum?
I think, look, the commission is wrapping up its existence currently now, and it'll cease to exist in law by the end of February. I'm not aware of previous instances where commissions of investigation have given interviews or have been questioned on the format of the report. I think, look, obviously it's open to people to request that the commission would do that in this particular circumstance.
Would you encourage it?
Again, my focus is very much on the government's response and how we actually work to address the issues and the recommendations that were flagged up by the commission and that survivors have raised with me. And I think I think as a government, that's how we can act to help survivors and address major issues such as information and tracing legislation, such as the restorative recognition scheme. And I think that's where our focus is.
Let's talk about tracing legislation then. We learned the other day through a spokesperson for the Taoiseach that we now believe a referendum would not be needed to allow for adopted children to access their birth certificates and details of their own identity. With that obstacle being removed, how quickly do you envisage legislation being out?
Well, my department has been engaging intensively with the Attorney Generals over the last number of weeks. And I'd hope within the next 2 or 3 weeks to be able to give a clear timeline to former residents as to when we will get the information and tracing legislation through pre-legislative scrutiny and into the Dáil to get it passed.
Are you still committed to having it fully legislated this year?
Absolutely, I want to achieve that within this year and as quickly as possible. It's a top priority for my department. It's a top priority for the entire government. And since the launch of the report, I've spoken to both the Taoiseach and the Attorney General about this, and we are at one that this issue will be prioritised by the government and to bring forward information and tracing legislation based on a GDPR approach, which puts the right of an individual to their personal information at the centre of the legislation. And that will be quite different to the approach that was taken by the last government and indeed governments prior to that. that approach was very much based on responding to a constitutional case from 1998. Obviously, GDPR has come into Ireland since 2018, and I think using GDPR as the centre to the legislation will provide us with a laws that really put the right of the adoptee to their personal information at the very centre.
Okay, and then can I ask you about redress? Do you propose to accept the Commission's findings or recommendations on redress, chapter and verse? Because there are some people who'd have some quibbles with some of the distinctions that they're making.
The government didn't restrict ourselves to the three categories of former residents that the Commission suggested would be able to avail of redress. What the government has done is we've set up an interdepartmental group to report on how on the design of a redress, the restorative recognition scheme. That's going to look at the three categories that of survivors that the Commission set out, but it's not restricted to those. And I think that is a significant decision that the government took at Cabinet last week.
Because there will be some people who'll point to the findings of the Commission and they'll say, the Commission says, for example, that nobody admitted to a mother and baby home after 1973 might be eligible for redress because whether they knew it or not and whether it was they were ever told it was there, that there were state welfare supports. And a lot of people would think it's very unjust that if there was a welfare payment that no one ever told you about, that would rob you from redress decades down the line.
Yeah, and look, the government was, I suppose, cognizant of that, and saw it was important not just to use those three criteria in terms of deciding access to the redress scheme. So we're setting up this interdepartmental group. We've given it a tight timescale within which to report back to government with proposals, the 30th of April, and once those proposals come back to us, we'll work quickly to pass legislation to allow for this particular scheme to implement, both in terms of redress payments, but I think it's also important the government took a decision to provide former residents with an enhanced medical card as well, as a further element of the restorative recognition scheme.
Okay, so that report from that interdepartmental group at the end of April and then legislation perhaps by summertime?
Yes.
Okay, we're out of time, Minister. We'll leave it there. Thanks so much for your time this afternoon. That's Minister Roderick O'Gorman, Minister for Children.